friends, George knows this, but Songalive is one of my favorite places to show up and teach and be in community. I, in particular, always feel moved by the global nature of this Sangha. So I appreciate that some of you have been chiming in the chat and saying where you're coming in from. If you haven't done that yet and you'd like to, please just name hello from. It's just so nice to see someone from Scotland, San Diego, Amsterdam, Seattle, Crete, Ontario. Friends, thank you. So I invite you to read the chat as I'm speaking. I imagine there is likely no one on the call that is confused about the importance of us being united as a global community in these times. And to be united over what we value most, what matters most to us. So if you're here, I'm trusting that what matters to you is truth, remembering the truth of our shared being. What matters is our interconnection. What matters is practice that brings us back to know our inherent liberation. So again, thank you so very, very much for being in this practice space together and for allowing ourselves over this next period of time to lean into feeling the strength of this global community that's united through our shared values and through our shared love. I'm calling in today from Whidbey Island, which is a little island north of Seattle, Washington. I feel very blessed to live in a beautiful place that has proved to be a nourishing place to be in this seated in this natural world, as our conditioned or habituated world feels particularly inflamed right now. I feel blessed to be resourcing as I work in the world by being seated in this natural world. So again, welcome to my home. Friends, wanted to focus today on returning to oneness. And this is in light of this theme of the recognition, the value in this time, in remembering that we are not separate from each other, specifically in an inflamed, conditioned reality in which much is suggesting that that is not true. So before we jump into what I'd like to invite you to do next, I want to invite what I like to talk about is a mindful minute, a pause that's only a minute or two long, but that encourages checking in with what's here now, what's alive now. So if it's nourishing to you, completely optional, you could place your right hand on the center of the chest and your left hand where your ribs come in together to touch, and just feeling the warmth of your own embrace for a moment. And again, just noticing what's here now, what's alive now. Whatever is, allowing whatever is to be exactly as it is. And then taking the longest and deepest inhalation and exhalation you've taken yet today. And again, friends, thank you. In the name of bringing as many voices into the room, so to speak, as possible in the name of feeling into our shared community. Drop in the chat, if you would, anything that's alive for you in this moment. We've heard a little bit about where folks are calling in from on the relative plane of reality, our physical locations. Now, if you would, share a little bit about your internal landscape. What's alive here now? What are you present to in this moment? As we begin together today, where are we beginning from? Thank you. Some confusion, some sadness, unfortunately a flu virus. Sorry to hear about that, Emma. Confusion, fear, jittery, slightly anxious fear, confusion, anger, pain, deep grief, living in America, worry, concern, a quiet Sunday, happiness, gladness, nervous system needing healing, grateful for new connection today, backache, warm heart being with you, Caverly, and everyone, grief, exhaustion, panic, grief, moments of rest, tired, drained, loving the connection of community from around the world, peace, anxiety, which is draining away now, heaviness and confusion, grateful to be here. Okay, friends, thank you. This is meaningful. I hope that you too can hear some themes in what's being shared. And as mentioned, so much inflammation in our world naturally leads to these kinds of responses. So let's begin by normalizing the experiences we're having, personal and collectively. Thank you for just beginning today's time together by naming what's here. Just in through the, just naming together, being heard and seen in this way can allow us to not only normalize our experience, but to feel a sense of, I am held. So I invite you in this moment to feel held in community. As you heard, we're going to be focusing today on returning to oneness, returning to true nature. So I want to begin in a way that I've never begun in one of these Sangha Live sessions, which is to, I want to invite you to do a little bit of an exercise. You could type a little something in the computer. You could handwrite something on a piece of paper or journal, or you might choose to sit and just reflect upon a very brief exercise here. And as we're about to move into it, in case you need to get some paper, I'll pause so you can do that. And I just want to acknowledge Lisa. I'm sorry to hear about losing three beloved cats in 6 weeks. Yes. Thank you for sharing your grief with us. So friends, I wanted to invite us to begin by paying attention to how we often identify ourselves to be as we move through the world, because we're going to be exploring what's beyond the surface definitions of how we think of ourselves today. So I'm going to invite a very brief writing prompt and some very brief writing prompts. And as I do this, I encourage you not to edit yourself. I encourage you to let yourself write freely. You don't have to share what you write with anyone unless you choose to. So you're just letting whatever's so for you be revealed. I refer, as many people here know, to the conditioned mind very regularly, and I'll be referring to this exercise as a way to reveal some of our conditioning. And by that, I just mean the mind that's habituated by experience. So that could be the mind that's shaped by society, culture, friends, school, religious practices, spiritual practice. All these things are shaping the mind. The conditioned mind is sometimes referred to as the mind of limitation. I'm not referring to the expansive mind that is beyond the limited sense of I. I'm referring to the mind where the activity that is, that creates the sense of I, lives. So let yourself write freely from this perspective in this moment. And what I'm going to do is offer a very simple prompt. I am, and then just fill in the blank. I am, fill in the blank. I am, fill in the blank. Let yourself go through this for a few moments. I am. From Virginia, I am feeling peaceful. I am. Just go through. Let it be. Let it be easeful, whatever naturally arises to the surface as you name what follows. I am. This is going to, we're going to be riffing off this together in our shared meditation today, friends. So give yourself a full minute. I am. Fill in the blank. I am. Fill in the blank. No right or wrong answers. So you might be including what you named, this is what's here now and beyond. What else? How else do you move to respond to I am? As you're ready, wrapping up the last prompt. And as you're ready, just setting that aside. Again, this is going to be woven into our meditation. So give yourself a minute as you set it aside to just glance through and see what you notice about what kinds of things arose for you to focus on as you responded to this I am prompt. Beautiful. Thank you. And now fully setting it aside, we're going to be moving into our period of meditation. This meditation, friends, has a theme of ease, the ease of being. So I want to invite you to come into the position that is most comfortable for you for this meditation. Really allowing a sense of nourishment. Sense of ease. And in natural response to the invitation to be. For most of us, our natural response to that invitation is, in some form, So allowing now allowing everything to be exactly as it is. breath to be exactly as it is. Allowing the sensations in your body to be exactly as they are. Allowing any emotion that might be present to be exactly as it is. And for some of us, this next one might be the hardest one, allowing the world to be exactly as it is right now. Doesn't mean we have to like everything that's happening. But for this period of practice, we're letting go of our resistance through the vehicle of allowing. Take a moment now to visualize a large whiteboard or chalkboard. I'm going to go with an old-fashioned chalkboard. I'm visualizing this chalkboard, and on this chalkboard is the list of I ams. So see your list of I ams. I am fill in the blank. I am fill in the blank. Whatever words and descriptors you chose. Just see these statements, I am, and then see them in a column. Stand back from them like a compassionate witness that's simply noticing, but not identified with any one particular statement. And now, friends, begin to see the ends of these sentences as quietly dissolving. So with your eyes closed, in your mind's eye, here are these statements. I am blank. I am blank. Begin in your mind's eye to visualize whatever the filled in the blank parts of these statements are. Visualize those words, those descriptors dissolving. As this dissolving occurs, what's left is I am. So the descriptors, the ends of these sentences and statements are fading. Leaving the I am to shine brightly. However we've described ourself is dissolving. Leaving behind this luminous I am. All the ends of our sentences, descriptors of what comes and goes, what's impermanent as it fades, as it's no longer center stage. Surrender the attention now to what remains. The I am. Notice that it takes no effort to simply be. I am. Notice that as these descriptors at the end of each statement come and go, it takes no effort for this I am to be ever present here. And now, let the attention rest now. In the I am-ness of your very being. Allow yourself to be nourished. Through the resting. Of your attention in being. Feel your body now infused with luminous being. these descriptors at the end of our statements. They come and go. Our bodies arise, pass through this luminous being, dissolve one day into luminous being. But our bodies are not separate. From being, nor are any of these impermanent descriptors. So, as you rest the attention in being, feel the way that being infuses all that is, saturates all that is, animates all that is. The last portion of this meditation will be in silence. Continue inviting the attention home. Home to rest. In luminous being. And then, friends, if you choose to, as we close our meditation out, you are invited to place the right hand on the center of the chest again, and the left hand where the ribs come in together to touch. Again, feeling the warmth of your own embrace. Perhaps even expressing appreciation. To the thread you followed that invited this conscious pause in your day. And closing out together by taking three of the longest and deepest inhalations and exhalations you've taken yet today. Friends, thank you. So I would love to invite you now, if you feel moved, to name what's here now, what's alive now in the chat. I'd like to invite you to do that and to allow whatever you're aware of to have that quality of being infused with being. Feeling my body being alive, ease, relief, hope, joy, gratitude, lightness and peace, peace, happiness, loving myself. And friends, of course, it's no problem if you're actually feeling anxiety in this moment. Sometimes in a moment like this, it might be like, well, I don't want to break the trend of what's being said, this new theme of spaciousness and expansion and rest. Just the invitation today is to allow, if that anxiety is present, allow it to rest a bit within this spaciousness, this open space of being. Thank you, Jim, for naming hopeful, for liberation. Lisa, gratitude and peaceful. So friends, I'm going to move on now and share something that I brought in to read today. I often don't come into these sessions with something to read, but there's a particular section of my book. The book is called The Heart of Who We Are, Realizing Freedom Together. And there's a particular section of the book that I wanted to focus on today, given what I've named about oneness and this timing of being in community together, in relationship with each other, while moving beyond any ways that relationship might sometimes make us feel separate. I am over here relating to you. No, in this session, we're focusing on the collapse of that distinction, I versus you, or I over here, you over there. And we're bringing the attention to what we share and to our inherent oneness. So I wanted to offer that today. And before I do, I appreciate that Sangha Live gives this prompt to teachers to remember to acknowledge Donna. So, George, if you would drop that link in the chat, that'd be great. Serena, thanks for asking how you make a donation. This is a wonderful moment to do it if you think that at the end of our time together, you might need to hop off quickly. I do see our contributions to the space being primarily the what's most important to me is presence, the presence we all bring. And if you have the resources to, as George said, keep this platform going, please, please do give as you can. So this, friends, is from a chapter in The Heart of Who We Are, Realizing Freedom Together. Actually, George, maybe you could drop that link in the chat too. I'd love for people who don't know about this book to know about it. There's a tab on my website, George, about the book, The Heart of Who We Are, Realizing Freedom Together. This chapter is called Returning to Oneness, Resting in Luminous Being, which was the focus, of course, in that meditation. I don't remember much about what led up to the insight. Over 20 years later, all I remember is the insight and the exact moment it arose. Over time, it's become clear to me that I, in terms of the ego, doesn't ever have insights. In other words, insights don't belong to the ego. I've heard that Jean Klein, the French teacher of the great Indian tradition, Advaita Vedanta, used to say that the ego is the clown that comes in after the show to claim the applause. It says, "I did that," and takes a colorful cross-legged bow. The ego, the activity of an illusory self, is the noisemaker, not the insight generator. Insights arise out of the mind of spaciousness, and we view possibility when the sky is clear. We taste possibility when the palate is cleansed. In the space between the thoughts, insights appear. But alas, I digress. I was sitting on the right side of the meditation hall, other monks on my left, and my teacher was at the front of the room. I'd been a monk for many years at this point, and thought disappeared into silence often, much more often than when my training began. A subtle sense of being always remained. When it came to my practice, my teacher almost always focused on what we are not. I later came to understand this as the neti neti approach. Neti neti is Sanskrit for not this, not that, or neither this or nor that. You are not these thoughts. You are not these emotions. You are not these objects of experience. If you keep negating, you'll end up with nothing but your true nature, which cannot be negated. You end up with yourself. When everything I'm not has been negated, that which I am remains. Imagine the sun as your true nature. As monks, where I trained, we focused intensively on the clouds. What is it that blocks the sun? When do the clouds appear? How do the clouds form? What is the result of being in the shade? What part of you ends up in the shade? I'm not suggesting that this was an intellectual process, by no means. Rather, I'm pointing to a metaphor that conveys where our focus was as we trained. It's not that there was no acknowledgement of the sun, it's that we didn't spend time focusing on it directly. And certainly, we didn't give many words to it. In group discussions, we rarely focused on what we are. Another monk had just finished speaking during a group discussion. I don't recall any of the content of what they shared. They were bringing attention, as we were trained to do, and as we recited in meditation every day at the monastery, to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. But after they spoke, there was a pause, and out of the silence, I blurted, "But we aren't that which suffers." All this focus on how we cause ourselves to suffer, all this focus on how we need to end our suffering, I got it that we don't cause ourselves to suffer, and we aren't that which is going to end it. We aren't even that which is experiencing it. The conditioned mind is the only place this internal suffering lives. We are not that. "It's true," my teacher said. "We aren't what suffers." And after pausing, she continued, "But what kind of workshop title would that be? You aren't suffering. No one would come." The room erupted in laughter, and she moved on. I remember getting it that she was joking, being tongue-in-cheek. But as she called on the next person, a deep disappointment welled. Why aren't we underlining this? If we keep focusing intensively on our suffering, doesn't that simply give a certain reality to it? And more importantly, to the I that experiences itself as separate? What are we doing here? Now, keep in mind that I came into practice without having any background in other spiritual approaches. I hadn't read about any pathways that focused on what we are. I knew one approach, and that approach served me deeply until it no longer did. To be clear, I have absolutely no doubt that it's valuable to focus on how suffering gets created. All of the contemplative technologies offered in this book and in our curriculum for youth were created, learned, adapted, shared with adults and teens because they transform people's lives. I'm also clear that if we found a way to apply these tools collectively, we would transform society. Many people have the good fortune to know themselves as awareness, to know their true nature, to recognize that they are not the clouds, that they are the sun, yet they still get trapped in suffering because they haven't had support in recognizing the various aspects of the personality they become identified with, or perhaps they struggle to own their projections, or maybe they have no tools for recognizing the deep habits of mind, such as implicit bias or other ways we're all habituated to uphold dominant culture and therefore suffer. Although they've glimpsed the truth of being, they don't have practices to assist in disidentifying with the conditioned mind, supporting the return to being. To not have a distant memory or egoic belief in being, but to truly rest in awareness. All of these technologies can be learned, and they work. They help to end suffering. When fully engaged with, they transform lives. No one can convince me otherwise. It's been my direct experience for over 25 years. However, it's also clear to me that at some point, and not necessarily after years of monastic training, it's invaluable to focus on who you are rather than giving your attention only to what you're not. It's invaluable to focus directly on the sun. Although that's not an entirely accurate way to describe it. For here's the fun part. You can't actually focus on who you are. You, infinite consciousness, being, awareness itself, you can only focus on an object. So just as the eye cannot focus on itself, you can't actually focus on who you are. The sun's rays cannot shine back onto itself. Its rays shine onto objects, onto things, Yet the sun illuminates itself. You are like that. You illuminate yourself. You can only be yourself. Your aware, luminous being shines. It shines on things. You don't get shined on. You, pure consciousness or awareness itself. True nature illuminates itself and all that is. You, pure consciousness, illuminate yourself and all that is. So friends, there's more I want to share with you, but I want to invite you to type anything that you're present to in this moment in the chat. Again, pausing consciously as a way to bring voices into the room. We're going to have a Q&A later where we're unmuting folks, and I'll be inviting you to engage directly with me. But in this moment, just naming anything that you're present to, anything that's alive here now, so that we might consciously acknowledge that we're sharing this experience. And so that we can feel a bit of a sense of where others might be, relief, air. I'm loving the truth of my own luminosity. Yes, it feels true, doesn't it, to recognize what's here, stable as everything else around us is coming and going. Calm, coming home, wonder, curiosity, calm. I feel breathed by God. I love the image of the sun, warmth and light, inherently fine forever. Thank you, Arthur. Recognition or remembering, grief of seeking to define I am for such a long time. Friend, say thank you that in this moment you have a direct experience available to you of who you are. Don't worry about the long time. Thinking, comparing, living from who you are, letting your light shine. Thank you, friends, so much. I will continue, and I invite you, as I do, to read through the chat again and feel the community. Let all of our different descriptions be part of one vast description of who we really are. So who is yourself? We've been talking about yourself, in quotes, in a specific way for most of this book. We've been referring to I as shorthand for the ego, which is how it was defined in my monastic training. I, as in the mind of I, me, mine, the clown who's always seeking center stage. I, in quotes, can only be one way. I can also be one way we refer to our self-aware being. So we're flipping this definition of I for the purposes of this session together now. And again, as you heard in the beginning, I think this is a great resource for our time to rest in who we truly are, to redefine who we think of as I. So I can also be one way we can refer to our self-aware being. In some traditions, they capitalize the S in self to make this distinction. Lowercase self is a way to name the activity of the conditioned mind, the ego. Uppercase self is the way of referring to knowing yourself as pure consciousness or the vastness that folks are referring to in the chat. One approach I'm describing, the approach I was seeped in at the monastery, could be described as a progressive or gradual approach. This approach includes contemplative technologies, and it gives attention to what we are not, as I named. It can have a step-by-step feel to it. A direct approach goes straight to the experience of the sun or to who we truly are. When we know the heart of who we are, these approaches need not be seen dualistically. We don't have to, someone mentioned comparing in the chat, we don't have to compare progressive and direct. We don't have to set them up in opposition to each other. Remember, and I make reference to this earlier in the book, when we're free, when we know who we truly are, we're free to move in any direction. So call me impatient, but when I look at our relative world, it seems to me that we desperately need all the tools, all the approaches, and all the pathways we can get. To paraphrase the Buddha, we have no shortage of examples for how hatred, greed, and delusion manifest in our world. What a wondrous and miraculous gift that we have just as many ways home. I'm a huge fan of the question, where's my entry point? So I ask you now, friends, what door are you called to walk through? Any door that opens and invites you home is a valuable one, one to be cherished, a portal to be honored. What offers freedom, more joy, more ease? What serves the remembrance of your very being? Listen to that. Just as speaking about the relative and the absolute requires nuanced balance, holding both progressive and direct approaches is a balancing act. Friends, I'm going to leave it there because I'm looking at our time, and I had a bit more that I was going to share with you, so I'll just jump to the bottom of what the section I was going to share, and then I'd like to open it up for discussion. So, this fill-in-the-blank exercise we began today with. You know, filling in the blank can be helpful because it can be helpful to name what you're conditioned to believe you are as a support for revealing what, in truth, you are not on the most fundamental level. I remember the first time that Maddie, a teen from one of our high school classes, got it. Wait a minute, I am not angry. Anger is arising in me. The vastness of me, I don't have to call it mine, and I certainly don't have to call it me. I recently had an exchange with Maddie. She had long graduated high school and hadn't had the same relationship with her moment, with her emotions since. It's such a blessing to learn from these early lessons in life, but any time is the best time. To take this a step further, which we can do here now, we can simply drop all the blanks and surrender the attention to I am. Who is that? Where is that? What is that? So that's the question I wanted to leave you with as we move into our discussion. Who is this? Where is this? What is this? Just bringing it even closer home. Friends, thank you. Before I open it up, because I know some people do need to be departing soon, I want to tell you, let's see, I'll get the link in just a moment. But I just want to name for any of you who will be hopping off before we go into group discussion that I'm very much looking forward to being back at Sangha Live in April for a day of practice. And we're going to be exploring what it means to be resourced for the times we're in April. So I hope you'll join me then. And lastly, I'm also just totally delighted that I'm going to do another practice collective that is going to be going through the content of this book, The Heart of Who We Are, Realizing Freedom Together. This practice collective will be an opportunity to be in global community. Here's the link for that one. As we move through the personal and collective practices in this book, The Heart of Who We Are. So I did want to make sure to share that. And now I'm again delighted to get to let all of that go so that I can be with you face to face with anyone who'd like to come on screen and have an exchange about what's alive for you and what you're noticing or any questions you might have.
Am I able to just jump in?
Please, Lisa. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa. Good to see you.
It's good to be here. Good to see you. I was, you mentioned something just a few moments ago of the relative versus, I'm not sure, I didn't quite catch the terms, but this jumping between sort of the chaos of life, the worries of life, to sort of the centered spiritual sense. And that's something I'm kind of struggling with myself.
Yes.
It feels so different. And I wondered if you could talk more about that.
Yes. Thank you, Lisa. And the way that I talk about it in the book is the relative plane of reality and the absolute. When I'm referring to the absolute, I'm referring to the I am that we focused on or didn't focus on. As you heard me say, it's actually not something you can truly focus on because it is what you are. But you get what I mean. We were focusing on the I am with that meditation. That's what's unchanging. That's what's ever present. So the chaos of the relative world, Lisa, is where we have what's coming and going, what's impermanent, what can, when we are identified with it as the totality of reality, what can make our lives feel overwhelming, stressful, what can produce quite a bit of anxiety when we feel as though that's the totality of reality. So my encouragement to you, Lisa, right now is rather than seeing the relative and the absolute as dualistic, separate. Oh, maybe on my cushion, I experience the absolute, but in my everyday life, where is that absolute again? Where is this sort of unchanging experience? What I would like to encourage you to do is what I did at the very end of the meditation, but I'd like you to expand upon it, which was, you may notice, I brought in, for example, the body. The body comes and goes. We're born, we die. But instead of seeing this absolute that's unchanging, the body is changing, the body is going to die, rather than seeing that is separate from the absolute, I invited to infuse the body with the absolute, infuse the body with being. Now, the body is infused with being, but that's what we forget when our condition, when we're identified with the conditioned mind and the body feels separate from being. Lisa, am I hitting it or am I speaking a little too abstractly? Are you with me?
I am, and I'm taking notes.
Okay, great. Great. Well, yes.
Helping.
It can sound a bit abstract to use these terms, but it's actually a very grounded experience and that to tap into, you could go back to today's practice and go back to filling in the blanks. I am fill in the blank. We don't have to see what's in the blanks. I am angry, for example, let's just say, as separate from the I am. And then therefore in practice, we're just trying to get back to this I am because I don't want to be angry. I know the suffering's over here in the anger. We can recognize that this anger is actually arising in the I am. It's made of the I am. How do we know that experience of, for example, anger? through the I am. We know that the I am is the aware presence that knows the experience of anger. So it's not separate. So one way I like to talk about this, Lisa, is rather than bringing practice into your life, I talk a lot about what it's like to bring your life into your practice. Bringing all experience into presence versus being identified with one small, limited sense of self that's trying to be more present in my life. We can know we're identified with that limited sense of self when we get off the cushion and we say, well, that was a good meditation because I really stayed with the breath, or I stayed with sensation, or that was a bad meditation because my mind is busy. The I am is undisturbed by a busy mind.
Thank you. Thank you. That gives me some ideas and some ways to ponder on it, which, you know, that's what I'm looking for. So thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you. Jim, hello, friend. Good to see you.
Hi, hello. Nice seeing you again. So when you have questions about the practice and you have questions or obstacles in understanding the I am or the being, what are some suggestions on consulting, you know, for example, I'll just use this as an example, a Zen master or a teacher, if you're having difficulties.
You know, Jim, my suggestion is to surround yourself with people who support your own remembrance. Any good teacher, and specifically all the sages, the Zen masters, the sages throughout time, have all been exceptional reminder friends who are here to serve as support in your own remembrance. So Jim, we've had some exchanges in the past, and I know the sincerity of your heart, I know your longing for liberation. Surround yourself, immerse yourself in context that reminds you of your very being, and that specifically remind you that you are inherently what you seek. So that's based on what I know of you, Jim. That's my best encouragement about how to find someone to practice with and work with. You're looking for someone who's not simply going to give you information. You're looking for someone who will reflect your true nature back to you until you don't need that reflection to be embodied in that way, although you might just enjoy being around them. Does that resonate, Jim?
Yes, it does. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to see you again. Helen, I think I saw your hands next.
Yeah, hi, Kimberly. Apologies, my internet is very shaky, so I've turned off all incoming and outgoing video. I hope that's fine. Good. All right. So my question is I've noticed now during the meditation and in life as well, that this Buddhist work that I'm doing and the practice, as wonderful as it is and as beneficial as it is, when it comes to, you know, holding and addressing emotions and the hard stuff of life and so forth, I find that my capacity to address those things in conversation with other people might sometimes be, you know, beyond what many people are comfortable with, so to speak. And I wonder sometimes if that is something other people are noticing as well. So you're used to being able to address and talk about emotions and so forth. And then you realize in conversation with people who might not have a Buddhist practice, for instance, that they are not comfortable with those kinds of discussions. I'm wondering if that's a common thread or if it's just me noticing these things.
Well, I'm already seeing someone in the chat saying yes. And so, Helen, I can assure you, you're not alone. I can assure you, you're not alone. And to me, Helen, one of the things you're gravitating toward is the practice of skillful means.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many moments where it's simply not appropriate to speak to someone who hasn't been afforded the same tools, contemplative technologies that you have, as if they have. In fact, you'll create a perception of separation between you and the other person if you bring in what can feel to another person kind of jargony, or like it doesn't really make sense to them, or like sort of, I don't know, like kind of highfalutin language, right? So I don't, for example, if I'm in a context outside this, I'm not walking around talking about like the relative and the absolute, you know, it's just not, if I'm at, you know, a family reunion, I'm not talking about the relative and the absolute. You know, I'm meeting people where they are, because in so many moments, what's actually skillful is to drop all language and simply be the very thing that you hope for your loved one. Which maybe, if you were in a context where someone had shared the same language as you, you might, support someone in having that experience through language. But language isn't necessary.
Yeah, and it's not, that's helpful. And it's not always the language itself. It's just, you know, being able to sort of address sort of elephants in rooms in what I think is quite a skillful way. But of course, that might also be too much for some people, or, you know, you feel there's an emotional undercurrent in a discussion and then you say, okay, I think I'm noticing this. And you can sometimes sort of notice that was too much for somebody. They were not, you know, open to the emotion being spoken out loud, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah. I think part of skillful means is paying very close attention to when I enter spaces and I might have a subtle sense of agenda. Like, oh, well, I want them to meet me over here, or I want them to have, you know, to be able to connect in the way that I connect to this emotional experience. But it can be helpful to ask myself questions like that so that I can get honest about whether there's some subtle agenda there. And if there is, it can be a good practice to let go of that agenda through just becoming very curious about another person's experience. Let that person use their words to describe their experience, or to make it clear that they don't actually want to go there. Which, why do, if I'm requiring someone to go there to meet my need, I'm not suggesting you're doing this, Helen, but I'm just taking it a little farther, then there's a lot of ego in that, isn't there?
Yep. Yeah. No, thank you so much. That was helpful.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, Serena. I see your hand.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I think what happens for me is I often get caught up in, you know, trying to change other people, or, you know, worried about someone else. They're not seeing things the right way, or I have to try to help them. And how do I focus on myself without feeling like selfish? Do you know what I mean? Like I'm not taking care of things that I need to be responsible for. I guess that kind of thing, like feeling like, you know, I need to fix somebody else's problem or warn them or tell them something or, you know, try to help them. And where they may not even want the help, but I know they're down the wrong path or they're not seeing things right. And then I feel like selfish just focusing on me. That's kind of the gist.
Yes, I hear you, Serena. And only because we have 1 minute left together, and I know I want to honor Sangha Live's timing and end on time. I'll just summarize this by saying what will be helpful, I think, is to pay attention to how it gets turned into a duality. I'm either focusing on myself or I'm trying to fix and change other people out there. And I'm being dramatic. I'm not saying you're going to be. Bruce had a little delay on my end. Are you all still able to hear me okay?
Yes.
Wow. Great. Thank you. So it's helpful to pay attention to whether it's getting turned into a duality in your own mind, because it need not be. But it's also helpful, I think, Serena, to pay very close attention to whether it's been helpful to you when people come at you with the energy of, I think you're going down the wrong path. I know what you should be doing. Let me help you. You know, be honest with yourself about whether that has actually served you. Again, I'm being a little more dramatic. I know that there are some moments where it's not really coming from like, oh, there's something wrong with what they're doing. It's more just you recognize you have something to offer, because Serena, we've had exchanges and I know that about you. But can you see how it could be helpful to bring attention to how the mind turns it into a duality, and then also turn and ask this question, how do I want my loved ones relating to me? Do I want to be around loved ones who are centered, grounded, present in themselves, which is cultivated through a practice and not at all a selfish endeavor for someone to have a practice that leads to such presence? Or am I looking for friends who are just going to tell me what to do? Does that make sense, Serena?
It's something to think about.
Good. Okay, Serena, good. Well, you know how to find me. We can have more exchange. It's a little abbreviated given our timing, but we can have further exchange. And friends, as I said, I would love to invite you to check out this practice collective for two months, once a week, we're going to go intensively into these collective practices and be in beloved community as we explore all of the not only the personal practices in the heart of who we are, but the collective practices as well. So thank you so much for being here with me today, friends.